from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, and your state legislature has left the building. Lawmakers finished up their work for the year last night, rounding out the last day of the fall legislative session by tackling everything from driver licenses for undocumented workers to Bay Bridge naming rights. And it was a busy final week as well. Prison overcrowding, regulating fracking, increasing the minimum wage, all part of the agenda during the legislature's final days of 2013. We'll wrap up the session and find out just what was accomplished and what wasn't from reporters who kept a close eye on the proceedings. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Late yesterday, the California State Legislature finished its long day's journey into night, wrapping up its last floor session by slogging through a final round of bills. It was an active week and an active session, lots of legislation now making its way to the governor's office. New bills aimed at reducing prison overcrowding, regulating fracking, increasing the minimum wage, driver's licenses for undocumented workers, all ready for the governor's signature. Joining us to assess this past session of the legislature, Scott Detrow, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED. Scott, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us as well, Juliet Williams, political reporter covering the state capitol for the Associated Press. Juliet, good morning as well.
Good morning.
And John Myers joins us too, political editor for KXTV in Sacramento and former Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED News. John, happy to have you back.
Thanks, Dave. Good morning.
So let's begin with one of the dramas of yesterday, which is the question of expanding the number of driver's licenses available to undocumented. Scott, you listed this as one of your top developments for the session, and this was something that it looked like for a while wasn't going to happen, and then it did. So take us behind the scenes with what went on.
Sure. I found that dead bills in Sacramento, bills that they say are not going to advance, are about as dead as soap opera characters, and they somehow find a way to come back and be revived. And this was an issue that earlier in the week, the supporters of this measure said, we're just going to wait until next year. One of the major holdups was the fact that amendments for these driver's license for undocumented immigrants would include some sort of mark signifying that these are not legal residents, that this is not, you know, any sort of equation for a federal immigration status or anything like that. And there was a lot of pushback from Latino lawmakers saying that they felt like that designated them as second-class citizens. They didn't like being marked out in that way. But yesterday, the measure was revived in the state Senate. It passed there. It passed in the Assembly. And this is now one of a host of laws dealing with undocumented immigrants that are going to Governor Brown's desk, including measures that would allow them to sit on juries, to practice law, that would bar local police from cooperating with federal immigration authorities, among other things. So a pretty big last couple of weeks for the issue of undocumented immigration here in Sacramento.
And Juliet Williams, does that mark that it says driver's privilege rather than driver's license mean anything significant in terms of what people who hold that license will actually be able to do or not do?
Well, I'm told that at the last minute, that was a lot of what the legal wrangling was around last night, and trying to reach a deal was about the size of the mark and how distinctive it would be. But California, the Latino caucus ensured that there is a measure in there that is for non-discrimination. So theoretically, it won't be. But of course, it's up to individual law enforcement when they see it, what happens with that. So I think there is certainly a fear in that community, which is what some of the wrangling was over.
And how dramatically, I mean, there are some people who already who are undocumented who are eligible for driver's licenses. So does this just greatly expands the pool, Juliet?
I would think that it would, yeah.
And John Myers, this is also in sort of an interesting window into sort of shifting viewpoints on immigration within the Republican caucus as well, because they also have this week gone on record as trying to urge the Congress to do more with changing immigration. How do you read what's going on overall with Republicans on this particular issue?
Well, I mean, if you step back and look at where the Republican Party has been in Sacramento now for the last decade, and I walk back to that time that I've been here watching them, I mean, there's definitely more ideological diversity within the party in the Capitol than we've had in a very long time. And I think the immigration issue is probably the most telling example of that. You're right. You had a handful of Republican legislators, state legislators yesterday weighing in on immigration reform. We had a bipartisan vote on the licenses issue that we've been sitting here talking about. I think they read polls just like everyone else read polls. They understand the changing dynamics of the immigration debate. And I think they also read demographic data. They understand the changing nature of California, that Latinos are the dominant ethnic group in California now. They still are lagging in the voter ranks, but I think that is changing, and I think we'll see some change in that in 2014. However, I think if you look at the base of the if you look at the base of the Republican Party, you still see a pretty intense debate on immigration. If you were to take the social media phenomenon of Twitter, which I put an asterisk by, that's really fair to make that a huge gauge of things. But if you look at that last night, you saw pushback in some of that really very core conservative part of the California Republican Party, some pushback on the immigration issue and other votes that their legislators were making at the Capitol yesterday. I think there's an intense debate still going on in that party, but there is change.
So, can I add one thing on the driver's license? I think this has been a really interesting issue to watch change over the last few years. If you think back to the 2008 presidential campaign, one of the first big vulnerable moments for Hillary Clinton was when she was trying to defend New York Governor Eliot Spitzer's decision to give undocumented immigrants driver's licenses. This is just 2008. It was a very controversial issue. And even at the beginning of this year, only one state had passed a measure like this. Now California is the 11th state to allow some sort of driver's license for undocumented immigrants. So this is one of those issues where the politics of it has just rapidly changed over the last few years.
I'm curious about whether or not this signifies anything about overall, the way in which the legislature gets its business done. We read so often, Juliet, about in Congress the extent of the polarization, and that with the Republican Party in particular, that there isn't much in the way of diverse views. It sounds like the California legislature has gone in a somewhat different direction. Now, maybe it's because Republicans in the state legislature don't have a lot of clout given the supermajority, so they might as well represent different viewpoints. But how do you read that, Juliet? Was this a legislature that got more done and got more done in a bipartisan way?
I wouldn't say that there was that feeling all year long, but certainly this is the result of the open primary that Californians approved. We were told that this would lead to, and as well as redistricting last year, which dramatically changed a lot of the boundaries. We were told that this would lead to more diverse views within each of the parties, that you wouldn't only have the most liberal Democrats and the most conservative Republicans coming into the state capitol. And I think we're seeing some of that. In addition, we have longer term limits. So some of these tough votes that people might not have been willing to make in the past, they now see the long game, and they're not as vulnerable as they would have been in the past. So I think there is a change. It's slowly taking place.
Juliet Williams, political reporter who covers the state capitol for the Associated Press. Let's move on to prisons, because all of you have said that this was obviously a significant issue and one of the significant pieces of legislation that got resolved this past week. And it's also interesting because the role that the governor played in all of this. So, John, first give us a short summary of what exactly was resolved as far as how we are going to reduce overcrowding in the prisons. And then take us behind the scenes a bit in terms of the role that the governor played.
Well, I think the shorthand here is that the state has a has a 1-2 option in place now to deal with the issue. And of course, as the audience knows, we roll back this issue now for more than a decade about the size of the prison population, the impact on medical care, and that's what led to the lawsuits and the federal courts assuming a fair amount of control over what happens in California prisons. So the 1-2 option here is that the state asks the court for more time to bring the prison population down. We're supposed to bring it down to about 109,000 inmates by December 31st. We go back and say, hey, can we have more time? If you give us more time, we will implement some changes to kind of bring down the recidivism rate in California. We'll deal with some of the issues on the local level. We'll basically try to fix the system. We'll take a new stab at fixing the system. If you don't give us more time, we'll spend $315 million this year, another $400 million next year, and we will ship out 5, 6, 7, 8,000 prisoners to out-of-state prisons, local jails, other private lockups inside of California. So we go back to the court now and ask them both of these options. The governor had only put forward really the spend money and move them out option a few weeks ago. And that was primarily designed by the fact that he didn't see any wiggle room on the behalf on the part of the judges to give us more time, and he just wanted to get to a number because everyone has said they didn't want an early release of inmates. That's the very common touchstone moment here in Sacramento. No early release, no early release, because that was the other option the courts gave us, was to simply open the doors and let some people out. There was a lot of shuttle diplomacy behind the scenes through the summer, and it really was sparked by the U.S. Supreme Court refusing to give the state more time to step in and give us an emergency stay to the action. And what's fascinating to me, Dave, is that everyone, both sides of the aisle, legislature, executive branch, all thought the U.S. Supreme Court was going to give us more time. And they did not. And John Roberts led the way in Washington in rejecting an emergency stay. And so you had a lot of shuttle diplomacy after that. The leader of the state Senate, Daryl Steinberg, met with the attorneys for the inmates. The governor talked to a few people at the 11th hour. From what I understand from sources, you had the federally court-appointed receiver for health care, Clark Kelso, doing shuttle diplomacy between the judges, between the state. What can we do? Everyone seems to think the judges may reconsider their December 31st deadline. But if they do, it's really going to be an about-face. This is a three-judge panel that has very harshly told the state to get its act together in court documents leading up to this. But this was one of those moments where everybody came together. We had a big of a political fight at the end of session here about it between the Senate and the governor. But the bottom line is everybody came together. But again, I'm fascinated that everybody thought that the court was going to bail them out, and then they quickly hurried to come up with an alternative plan.
And what are you each seeing about the role of the governor and how that's changed? He seems, Scott Detrow, to be very engaged this week in particular pieces of legislation, signaling what he would support and what he would not. Was there a different Jerry Brown in play this past week?
Yeah, I thought what he said publicly was particularly interesting. The governor has a very long track record here of just kind of not weighing in on measures before the legislature. Earlier this year, he was asked about a specific bill at a press conference, and he almost sneered, saying, "Bills, there are thousands of bills. I'm not going to get into that." And typically, once a measure is passed and goes to the governor's desk, you won't hear anything from the governor's office about whether or not he's going to sign it until they send out a press release saying these are the bills that Governor Brown signed today. So this week, he started jumping into the debate before bills had even been passed, the minimum wage measure. That's something that all of a sudden he, Speaker Perez, and Senate President Steinberg all announced that they were in support of it. They wanted to see it passed. And not only that, once they made that announcement, the pace at which the minimum wage would be increased was really sped up as the bill was amended. So that was one issue. Fracking was a particularly interesting issue because in the way that California regulates this, there have been kind of two tracks of putting new rules on it. One is
and Scott,
the regulatory
if I might, let me
sure.
just interject for a moment.
I guess we'll
because
talk about that.
Yeah. No. I just you in a piece I remember from a few weeks back, you actually gave us a nice sort of one sentence definition of fracking, which I think is always useful when we get into this topic. So, by way of getting to what you wanted to say about that, fold in if you would your brief explanation of what fracking actually is.
Sure thing. Fracking is a process where drillers use thousands and thousands of gallons of water. They mix it with chemicals and sand, and they blast it deep underground to break apart shale rock and get oil and gas out of it. This is a very big, controversial technique that has basically powered a new domestic energy boom here in the United States, getting to this oil and gas locked inside shale rock that up until about a decade ago we just couldn't access. California is probably the next big play, as they like to say, in the industry. The Monterey Shale could be one of the biggest oil reserves in the world if they can get this oil out of it. So California is likely going to have a big oil boom based on fracking. So there's been an effort to tighten California's rules and put specific rules in place for this process that haven't existed before. So back to what I was saying about the governor is that his administration was working on putting together regulations. That's a long process involving drafts, involving public feedback. And then at the same time, the legislature, Senator Fran Pavley, decided to put forward a bill kind of telling the administration what to do. Here's what you need to have in your regulations. Here's how tough they need to be. And that was something where you saw some pushback from the administration on that, specifically the issue of whether or not fracking itself should be a separate permit aside from the permit that these drillers are filing to drill wells in the first place.
And part
that's
of
something where
sorry,
but anyway, they came to agreement, and then Brown publicly pushed for it at the last minute, and that was kind of surprising.
And part of what's also interesting about this particular issue, Juliet Williams, is that it was one of those – it's in some ways a kind of classic example of sort of getting things done, a compromise of sorts that no one's exactly thrilled with, right? The business isn't thrilled with this. People on the environmental side aren't thrilled with it because they wanted to get rid of fracking. This simply regulates it. So give us your sense of what was significant about getting this done and getting it done in a way that nobody particularly liked, but getting it done just the same.
Certainly. I think there were a number of bills on fracking at the beginning of the year, and they slowly were whittled down as the year went along. And by the end, this was a bill that really no one was totally thrilled with, but it was something. And I think that for Jerry Brown and for some of the other people who want to set regulations, it's at least a foot in the door. It's something that gets us in the game, and that I think Jerry Brown often tries to take this longer view, and he recognizes that legislation is done incrementally and that people are slow to move on things, whether it's the driver's licenses or the prison issue, that it takes a long time sometimes to get things done. So you might not get the ideal bill that you wanted initially, but in the long run, he can look toward what he's after.
And would you say, John Myers, that this was not a great session for people on who put environment first in their legislative agenda? Was this not such a great session for environmentalists? Because there's this other thing going on with something called CEQA, one of those acronyms I'll let you define. But was this not a great session for environmentalists?
I love defining acronyms, Dave. Don't worry about that. I think it was not a great week for environmentalists. I'm not sure that I could back up and say it was not a great year and not a great first year of a two-year session. you've referred to two of them. One is the fracking fight, because the governor and everybody else moved to this regulatory scheme that at first the Sierra Club opposed. By the end of the week, when some new amendments were taken to the bill that the environmentalists that supported the regulation of fracking, which was the NRDC, the California League of Conservation Voters, they all walked away from the bill all of a sudden and called for a moratorium. So they lost that one. And yes, they didn't do so hot, or they lost on this issue about CEQA. CEQA stands for the California Environmental Quality Act. It is California's landmark environmental law that requires a pretty thorough, hefty environmental review of development projects as they move forward, the ability to challenge them in court. The governor has been a tireless critic of CEQA. You know, the famous comment from him a few years ago was, there's never been a CEQA exemption that I didn't like. The governor has wanted to modify it. He thinks it slows down the business process, development process. The leader of the state Senate, Daryl Steinberg, has been an advocate of CEQA reform, especially in urban areas. And so, yeah, by the end of the week, you saw Steinberg, who had been battling on this CEQA issue all year long, quickly tuck into a bill that was about an arena for the Sacramento Kings, the NBA basketball team, which was a CEQA bill, tucked into that bill, a larger CEQA fix that basically says that issues about traffic and aesthetics in urban areas, they get to be fast-tracked and not challenged in court quite as strenuously as they are under the current CEQA guidelines. So I don't think it was a great week for those environmental groups. A year, I do think they can point to other benefits. I still think, you know, the governor's still in line with them on renewable energy, climate change. This is not an anti-environment governor, but it's a governor who picks and chooses his issues fairly carefully. He really, frankly, is not an ideologue. And I think Jerry Brown's national portrayal as, you know, Governor Moonbeam, the crazy liberal from California, is not quite true. And this is another year of proving that. He picks and chooses issues and dives into these things. And on environmental issues, in some he's with them, in some he thinks they go too far.
Has the governor lost really on anything, John? Not only this session, but over the last couple of years. It seems like he's on a pretty good run from his point of view.
It's it's very hard to point to something. I do think the prison issue is a real weak spot for the governor here. I mean, if he has crafted a deal here to avoid the judges ordering a release of prisoners or something like that, then he will have dodged that bullet. I think prisons has been a very tough issue for him. I think he's lost a few lawsuits in a couple of other places. High-speed rail continues to be a bit of a fight. But I think you're right. I mean, I think if you look at Jerry Brown's track record, it has been very good. He has been helped by a couple of things. The economy naturally has come back a little bit. I think people were weary of the way government had worked in Sacramento before that and gave him a lot of room. And I think the governor walks in with this legacy kind of issue and the adult in the room. And I think that has helped his negotiation with a legislature that's relatively younger and newer. So, yeah, I think he's on a pretty good streak.
John Myers.
If I could add.
Yeah, Julia, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the prison issue this week and in the last couple of weeks was interesting in terms of the governor, because it's one of the few times that we've seen their political fight really spill into public like that. Usually he has done the background work and been able to reach a compromise behind closed doors before you have two press conferences where, you know, Brown came out with the Republican leaders and the Democratic speaker to announce their prison deal. And then later Steinberg had a separate one where he had a different plan. And that's one of the few times that we've seen it get to that point where they actually come out in public. We saw that a lot during the Schwarzenegger years where there'd be this public standoff and then later a compromise would be reached. But Brown has pretty much kept those to a minimum.
And on that point, and we'll just touch on this briefly and return to it after our break, but Scott Detrow, say something about how this has worked in terms of the Democrats' supermajority and what that has signified for what got done. I think there was probably a sense that the Democrats would get to do whatever they wanted to do, and certainly sure, a lot of that has happened. But what's happened and what's not, I guess, when it comes to the clout that Democrats have in the legislature?
You can point to a couple of the more aggressive bills that got held up. Among the gun measures, the one that did not pass would have basically put a statewide background check on any bullet purchase. That got put on hold for another year. Another measure would have taken away the Boy Scouts of America's tax breaks because of their policies barring gay leaders. So there were a couple big liberal issues that didn't get through, and certainly they did not raise taxes this year. But look at what happened this week. A host of bills dealing with undocumented immigrants, a host of bills that labor is a big fan of, a host of bills, you know, kind of cracking down on guns, putting more gun control in place. So a lot of these big ticket liberal issues did get through in the legislature this year.
And has that increased the stature of both Speaker Perez and Senate President Steinberg? Are they kind of riding the same wave that Jerry Brown is riding?
I think that Brown has probably gotten a bit more good press than they have, and that's just due to the legislative process that they have to kind of publicly get members in line. Of course, both those leaders are at the end of their terms running both of those chambers. So that's certainly a dynamic that'll play out and change the way that they're looked. And you know, you'll start to see a bit of lobbying over the coming legislative session. But they did get a lot of the measures they pushed through, to the governor's desk.
Scott Detrow, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED News, joining us along with Juliet Williams, political reporter covering the state capitol, and John Myers, political editor for KXTV in Sacramento and former Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED News. You're always going to have that last bit of attribution, I think, John. You're always going to be known as
Thank
the
you,
former
Dave.
Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will take your calls. What do you think of what the legislature has accomplished during this last session, whether it's about prisons or fracking or minimum wage, undocumented, getting driver's licenses? We'll talk about all of those and take your points of view as well. Other things we can get to, a domestic workers' bill of rights, some things about bridge naming rights. If we want to resume that particular debate, we can get into all of this after our break. Here's the number to join us, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website as well. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the legislature has left the building, and we're talking about what they accomplished during this past fall session. Joining us to do that, Juliet Williams of the AP, John Myers, KXTV in Sacramento, Scott Detrow, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED News, and we'd like your participation as well. You can join us at 866-733-6786. What do you think of what the legislature passed and what the governor is soon to sign? What did they do that you liked? What did they do that you did not like? We'd like to hear from you. 866-733-6786. Let's go first to William, who joins us in Belvedere. William, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I would very much appreciate the guests spelling out exactly what environmental protections were incorporated in the fracking legislation. I've heard a whole lot of discussion about who won, who lost, etc., but I don't know what really the provisions are.
Fair enough, William. Thank you for bringing us back to that core point. So, Scott, I'm going to nominate you as the fracking master here and explain what's actually in it.
Yeah. Sure. I think the biggest thing that this bill does is provide a lot of information about drilling, where fracking is taking place, how much water is being used, where that water came from, where it goes afterwards. And most importantly to a lot of people, what chemicals are in that water. Right now, that information just is not being provided on a regular basis to the state. This bill will require drillers to give a lot of preliminary information to state regulators when they apply for a fracking permit and then regularly report where this information so that people can look up, okay, I want to see what happened at this well near me. Okay, I can read it. Here's what went into the ground. And that information is going to be put on a website that the state puts together. That's a big departure from what other states have done. They've relied on a website called Frack Focus that has gotten some flack from a lot of environmental groups because it's partially funded by the drillers themselves. Another interesting thing that this does is if you live near where drilling is taking place, you'll get a heads up before it begins, and you'll have an opportunity to say, okay, please come in and test my water quality before this starts. That way you can point to that and say, hey, my water was fine, then drilling came in, and now it's messed up. Because in a lot of other states where fracking has been taking place, they simply didn't have that information available, and it was hard for people to prove that it was the driller's fault that their water quality was screwed up.
Dave, can I just tell you one thing that I think is interesting on this is that a key source of the fight in the final, really, frankly, 2 weeks of this was how much information about those chemicals was going to be revealed. Scott is exactly right. You now will know under this bill what the chemicals are, but some environmentalists wanted to know what the concentrations of the chemicals were. And the oil companies and the oil industry said, well, that's a trade secret. And that became a source of the fight. In the end, we don't get the information about the concentration, but the governor and others said, you know, and Fran Pavli, this state senator from Southern California, who's really an environmental champion, who was carrying the bill, said, knowing what the chemicals are is better than the system that we have now. You know, this is a good start to dealing with fracking.
William, and can I quickly add to that real quick on the trade secrets? I think California probably has the toughest law in place now of all the states that have similar measures on the books in terms of the fact that the drillers have to justify these trade secret claims. They have to provide information to the state saying, this is why it's a trade secret. This is why I want to withhold it.
William, thanks. Thanks so much for the call. And let's go next to Karen in San Francisco, who also wants to ask about fracking. Karen, you're on.
Thank you. I have a question about the association between fracking and earthquakes. I know in Youngstown, Ohio, they had an injection well that came online to pump wastewater and into storage underground. And in the year that followed after that well became online, they recorded 109 earthquakes. And the strongest measured about 3.9. And so there seems to be some association between fracking and wastewater injection and earthquakes. I'm wondering about the wisdom of this whole thing coming into California in earthquake territory.
Yeah, Karen, thank you. Anyone want to take that in terms of whether or not the earthquake factor was part of the debate?
Yeah, I spent a good bit of time in Youngstown covering that story, actually, before I came to KQED. She's correct. There were earthquakes there, and Youngstown, Ohio is certainly not a center of seismic activity, so that surprised a lot of people there. And state regulators did say that it was related to the drilling industry. What happened was that they were taking wastewater from fracking sites, and they were injecting it deep underground in these things called deep injection wells, where you basically dispose of your waste. And they had the bad luck of injecting that water at a constant high pressure right onto a fault line that nobody knew about, and that caused some minor earthquakes there. That's happened in other places, too. I think the important context is it's not the fracking itself. It's not the getting the oil and gas out of the ground that's tied to this quake activity. It's disposing of the wastewater in these injection sites that has caused this.
Karen, thanks. Thanks for the call. And you can join us as well if you have a question about something the legislature did. Join us at 866-733-6786. Come on, listeners. Now, this is an interesting phenomenon. This happens sometimes when we do shows about state politics, that our listeners are sort of not tuning in exactly, not listening, not phoning in with their questions. So I'm going to give this challenge to our panelists to come to identify something that people should really care about that the legislature did, because although it seems like all politics all the time under the Capitol Rotunda, in fact, many of these things actually do, in fact, affect people's lives. So listeners, we want you to dial up here if you have a concern about something the legislature did. And Juliet, I'm going to turn to you and ask you to pick a bill that the legislature passed that listeners really should be maybe paying attention to.
Well, I think I'll do a slight cop-out and choose a number of bills. The California legislature came back and did a lot of bills regulating guns and weapons, and that was one of the key things that Democrats had come out in January in the wake of Newtown, promising that they were going to do. It's something that got a lot of discussion in Congress and nationally and Obama pushing for, but really didn't go anywhere there. And in California, they did. We already had some of the most strict gun regulations in the country, and they managed to push it further. Whether Californians agree that that's a good thing or not, I guess that's up to some of the callers.
Juliet Williams joining us from the AP. Other nominees for things the legislature did that were going to change people's lives in the year ahead.
Dave.
John, yeah.
First of all, I was going to say we've done a lot of these shows in the past. If we start talking about Prop 13, we'll get some calls. There were no changes to Prop 13, folks. But I will point to two things that I do think are that they sort of get lost in the shuffle because they happened earlier in the year. But if we are looking at the legislative year, the first of all is the legislature and the governor working on a full implementation of the Affordable Care Act, which we know is Obamacare across the country. California is the most aggressive state at implementing the Affordable Care Act. We have expanded the number of people who can join Medi-Cal, which is California's version of Medicaid, people for low-income people who can get health care. They will be brought in under the system. The state is really betting that the federal government continues to have this partnership, a financial partnership, in bringing these people into the insurance rolls. We have done a massive expansion of that, and I think KQED, a little plug here, has done a great service in its coverage of the health issues that people can find online. And also I would point to, as part of the state budget deal this year, this changing of the way money is spent on education in California, the local control formula, as it's called, which means more money for students who are English learners and come from low-income families. That is a dramatic change, the money over the next few years in where we educate these kids. The governor was passionate that if we don't reach these children, English learners and low-income family children, that we're not going to see the gains in California we want in the future. I think those are two very big things that this legislature did in 2013.
John Myers, political editor at KXTV. Yep, Julia, go ahead.
I just wanted to add on the education money, which John is correct, that's a big dramatic change. And some of the groups that had pushed hardest for this were concerned that maybe there wasn't enough in the legislation that passed as part of the budget to ensure that the money would go where it was most needed and that there was some accountability at the local school board level. So we saw legislation get through yesterday through both houses. It's going to Brown that will hopefully do that a little more, require some more disclosure, some more, you know, public accountability for the money.
866-733-6786. We do have some calls stacking up. And by the way, if you're not calling because you don't think the legislature is worth much, you can call and tell us that as well. You can call about why you're not calling. That would be another avenue for listener participation. But let's go to Matt, who wants to talk about fracking. That is one thing that is on people's minds this morning. Matt, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the call. One of the points that my understanding was really contentious is that in the last day or two before the bill was finalized, some really strong language was inserted to the bill that would really make it hard to enforce some environmental protection for the state of California. Could you make a comment on last-minute amendments to the bill?
Scott?
Sure. I think a lot of the back and forth over the last few weeks and in terms of Governor Brown and the administration getting on board with this issue had to do with two things. The first was whether or not fracking itself deserved its own permit within the drilling process. The point that the energy industry made was, look, this is one part of the broader drilling process that we've been doing here for years. We already apply for drilling permits. You have very strict casing requirements in place already, making sure this stuff doesn't get out of our wells. Why do you want us to apply for a second permit on top of the first permit we're applying for? Environmentalists, Senator Pavley pushed back very hard, saying, no, this is unique enough, this is new enough that it needs its whole own thing. And that's something that Governor Brown ended up changing his mind on and backing her on that. The second issue was about the scope of this. Is this only going to deal with this one specific process called hydraulic fracturing, or is it going to take a look at other techniques that they're using to break up the shale rock too, particularly something called acidizing, which sounds pretty nasty. Essentially, they're taking acid and sending it underground and using it to basically melt up that shale rock to get to the oil. The people writing this bill said, well, that sounds like we should be regulating that one as well, but as with the permits, Driller said, this is something we've done before. It's something we've done for years. Why are you adding this new layer? And in the end, acidizing was included in the regulations as well. So those were the two big pushes that a lot of the more technical stuff centered around.
Matt, thanks. Thanks for the call. John in Alameda is up next. John.
Yeah. First, I'm curious to know what the odds are of Jerry Brown signing the 3-foot passing bill for bicyclists. His approach to signing bills is kind of weird. I have a second question, too, and that is I'd like to hear more about how the NRA got to Sacramento about the gun control.
Okay, John, thank you. Limits on what was – we were talking before about quite a lot being done on gun control, but John wants to know about what didn't happen and also about bicyclists. Anyone take that, please?
Boy, those two don't go together at all. Let me. If one of my colleagues here has a comment on the bike one, I will let them say it. Though I think that we have seen this debate before. The governor vetoed a bill about bike passage last time. I don't know. You know, Jerry Brown reads these bills carefully, and he really is, as I said earlier, he picks and chooses where he is on issues, local control, state control. So I apologize. I don't have a good read on where the governor's going to go on that. But I think the gun control issue is fast.
Go ahead, Juliet, and then we'll go back to John on guns.
Yeah, John's correct that he did veto that last year. I think the new bill makes an attempt to address the concern that Caltrans and the governor had about passing from behind. So they did make some modifications. Whether or not he signs it or not, as John said, is still up in the air. But I think it was more carefully tailored in hopes of getting his signature this year.
And John, on guns and the NRA.
On guns, I think it's complicated. I mean, I would point primarily to the Democratic majority, at times supermajority. They're not a complete supermajority at this point in the legislature. They are not uniform on this issue of gun control. You heard a long, impassioned floor statement last night from a state senator from Los Angeles, from some of the toughest neighborhoods in Los Angeles, Rod Wright, Democratic state senator, against bills limiting guns and limiting and a bill that actually went to the governor. He actually lost out on this one. A Democratic bill to ban these detachable magazines from semi-automatic weapons. He's basically a guy who says it's a Second Amendment issue. And I understand there's a difference of opinion as to whether or not there's a Second Amendment issue there. But it's fascinating that not all Democrats walk in the same path on the issue of gun control. And so the reason you didn't see more of them get through is not Republicans, but it is Democrats. Mm. Is it the power of the NRA? They're a powerful lobby, but they're not as powerful here as they are in other states. California has already the most strict gun laws on the books. And I do think this debate over some of these, registering ammunition, large capacity magazines on other weapons, they didn't get through the process. And I do think either the details of the bill or the larger discussion about guns and gun safety and gun violence is far from resolved.
And Dave, they still did pass I think around 10 measure strengthening gun laws in California. And I think this is an issue. This is one of those issues where you see a growing divide between what's able to get done in a state like California and what's getting done nationally. Mm-hmm. Of course, President Obama's plan to tighten background checks on the federal level went nowhere. It stalled. It couldn't even pass the Democrat-controlled Senate. And just this week in Colorado, two state senators were recalled,
right?
for strengthening gun laws there. And, of course, this is a state that's trended Democrat, voted for Obama the last two elections as a Democrat governor, and it's been the site of two of the most horrific mass shootings in recent memory. And these two Democrats were booted out of office for strengthening gun laws. So it's a tricky issue.
And Scott writes in on that topic as well. He says, these gun control bills are unconstitutional. They're merely legislation enacted on emotions. There's no reason there. They're only serving to infringe upon law-abiding citizens. Other listener comments. Someone writes, I'd like to ask whether there's any movement now that there's a two-thirds Democratic majority for an extraction tax on oil companies, something Democrats talked about when they didn't have the votes. That would alleviate many financial problems in the states. Are the Democrats going to do that now?
No.
No.
Sorry. And let me point out really briefly why, Dave. First of all, the Democrats do not have a supermajority in both houses right now. There are vacancies in the assembly that has weakened their power. They are going to fight. They're going to have to fight tooth and nail to keep that supermajority in the state Senate in the 2014 election cycle for a few other reasons. We won't go too far down that. But again, they're not all uniform on the issue of taxes. The governor made a very strong signal down, up to the legislature this year that said, I'm not interested in any tax increases. And so I don't think you're going to see – I think if you're going to see that issue, the oil tax we've been talking now for strongly 5-6 years here in Sacramento, you're not going to see that unless it gets to the ballot. I think it's got to be a ballot measure. It's going to have to go around the legislature. It's a very tough vote here. And again, this gets to my issue about Democrats. One of the huge media fallacies – I hate to pick on the media, but columnists, other people, we're all straight reporters here – is that – that the Democratic supermajority was going to run the table on issues when they were elected this past year. Well, they're not. They don't all see eye to eye on all of these issues. And I think we've been talking about that now for the better part of an hour. And so this notion that they would all come in and vote for an oil tax or a cigarette tax or a change of Prop 13, it didn't happen. And I think it misunderstands the way that people differ by region, by issues on the economy, on everything. And it's not just that party label.
Back to the topic of prisons. Gil wants to talk about that in Hayward. Gil, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, great panel. I think your guests are making a lot of good comments, and I care about all these issues. And I think there was progress on fracking and guns and things. But about prisons, this is not exactly a bill. But the governor did not address this issue of the prisoner hunger strike at all. And there was one person who died, and several others nearly did, until they called it off. And there actually is a bill about building a jail in San Mateo County that one of the, I think it's a state senator, is trying to push, even though San Mateo County has a lot of budget. They've had a lot of budget shenanigans going on there. But it's just, you know, the panelists are talking about this as if there's just differences between Democrats. I mean, we have serious campaign finance issues. You know, the prison guards union is one of the biggest contributors to the governor's campaign. I'm sure others, you know, we know how big an issue this is on the national level, but we don't always address it on the state level. So, you know, would anyone like to talk about that? Why did the governor not address this issue at all when, you know, incarcerating, you know, putting people in solitary for years and decades on end? Why are we doing that?
Thank you, Gil, for the question. Scott, I'm going to toss that to you. And by way of answering, if you would reference also the union question and whether or not – we talked a bit ago about whether or not environmentalists were successful in what they wanted the legislature to do. What about unions, prison guard union, teachers union, and others?
Sure thing. First on the prisons. That's correct. The hunger strike lasted, you know, about 2 months, give or take. It started out with thousands and thousands of inmates. You ended up with a core group who did not eat for the entire period of time, though they did get by on essentially Gatorade and really nothing else. But that was not focused on the overcrowding issue that kind of dominated Sacramento discussion among policymakers and leaders here. That was about the long-term use of solitary confinement for people that the prison system says are involved in gangs or gang leaders. And that's not really something that Governor Brown engaged on at all. I don't think he made a single public comment, maybe one or two, if that, but I don't recall a single public comment. Certainly the corrections department was very heavily engaged, but it just wasn't something that was taken up by lawmakers or the governor this summer. In the end, the biggest concession that the strikers got was the promise to hold some hearings on it down the line. So it just didn't really make it to that level of debate here.
And briefly on the clout of the unions, Scott, on both the prison guards union but teachers union as well.
Unions in general, I think that there are several measures that they would be happy with. The minimum wage is one. There was an issue earlier this week, one of the kind of lower level debates with all the stuff going on here, making it easier for people to take time off work without getting formal permission to do that and being able to keep their jobs. And there's something that also critics of unions pointed to with frustration, and that they feel like unions were able to rework a bill that would streamline the process for firing teachers so that it wasn't as strict as it would have been before.
Dave, I can tell you just on prison guards really quickly, the prison guards' political power has kind of diminished in the last few years. They did get a couple of things that are worth noting this year. They got a new contract, which gives them a little bit more money in the next couple of years. And keep your eye on this issue about where we move these prisoners. One of the prisons in particular is a privately owned prison down in the Central Valley in a place called California City, that the prison deal says that state prison guards would go down and work in that facility if we move inmates down in there. That is new jobs for the California Correctional Peace Officers Association. That could be a big win for them there. But they've been a little quiet over the last few years. They got a little bit of a bump this year.
And with that, we must pause for a moment. As many of you know, this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. To find out more about how to do that, you can visit kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. And back to our calls. Let's take a call from Jason in Redwood City. Jason, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? Quick question. With the concerns about budget in California and the recent, legalization of marijuana in Colorado and Washington, I'm wondering if there's any talk in session or any proposals put forth about legalizing marijuana for California. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Jason, thanks. Julia, you know the answer to that?
Yes, there was a move, an attempted move in this final week to try and do what we call a gut and amend, where you take a bill that had been out there and essentially insert an entirely new bill. But it didn't get through, and I'm not sure what happened to it in the final hours. Do either of you know?
No, and I think that might have been
about
the one that, the marijuana dispensaries motion that would about cities. That may be what Juliet's talking about. Sorry, we're in different spaces. But the larger issue that I think the caller is asking, Dave, about legalization, I haven't seen that in the legislature because I think there is still a very active movement to put that on the ballot as a ballot measure. You've got another ballot measure already filed, possibly for 2014, if they could gather the signatures. I think if that happens in California, it's going to go through the ballot. It's not going to go through the Capitol.
So is that another example, John, of the assumption that the big majorities in the Democratic legislature in a state like California would mean all these liberal things would happen? Is that another example of that not necessarily being the case?
I think so. I mean, really, if you look at the Democratic caucus in the state assembly and state senate, they come from very different backgrounds. They come from more socially conservative communities in cases in the Valley. They come from business backgrounds. Some come from local government and labor unions. And they really don't always mesh on all of these huge issues here. And I do think Juliet pointed out a great point early in this broadcast. The changes we made last year, the top two primary and redistricting, they are bringing in a different crop of legislators. Plus, we modified the term limits law in California. These people can now sit in office longer. I think that's going to be interesting to watch, too. This was the largest freshman class in a generation.
And I also think that marijuana might have a different breakdown than the typical Democrat-Republican divide, where you have libertarian conservatives pushing just as much as really liberal Democrats.
Right.
Let's go to Misha next in San Francisco. Misha, go ahead, please.
I just wanted to know the whereabouts of Assembly Bill 955. I believe it affects community college students. I'd love to take my comment off there, and thank you for hearing me.
Okay. Question about community college costs. Anyone know?
With the amount of bills going through this week, there's a lot of measures that we've got to backtrack on now that they're done voting on basically a bill every 3 minutes.
Yeah, right. I apologize to the caller. The one thing I do know that happened with community colleges in the final hours was a pretty strenuous debate about how much money they get because their finances are tied up through the Proposition 98 education funding guarantee. But if it's more precise than that, I apologize. Right, with 1,400 bills, we may be lost on that one.
All right, sorry, Misha. Let's go to Mario next in Alameda. Mario.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
I'm just calling to just talk about the legislator. I moved here from Virginia about, say, 12 years ago. And I moved here when Governor Schwarzenegger was elected, and I was like, wow, they just elected that guy. And just watched as the legislator just totally kept him embattled. I mean, both sides, Democrats, Republicans, just seemed to want to keep everything in gridlock and not get much done. I still don't see them getting much done except on emotional issues such as gun control. They don't seem to really report facts on things. And me and my girlfriend have, like, looked at it, and we're like, well, it might be time to move out of the state. We feel that they, like, the legislators seem to pass lots of tax laws regulating on small businesses.
Okay, I'm going to hold you there, Mario. Great points, and I'm sorry to cut you short, but we're very short on time, and it's actually a nice last question for each of our panelists to respond to about whether or not this was a can-do or can't-do legislature, whether or not they got things done, and whether or not, in particular, they're passing things that, at least in Mario's view, tax people and stress people too much. Juliet first.
Sure. I think the overwhelming thing that we saw was that there were not a lot of tax measures that got through, despite the opportunities when we had a two-thirds legislature, because Jerry Brown made it very clear last year that if there was going to be a tax increase, it would be the voter-approved Proposition 30, which he pitched as new money for schools, and Californians backed him. So that was really a decision by the California voters, and we saw him take a very restrained, I won't say conservative, but certainly right of center view on the budget.
Let me hold you there, just 10 seconds each from John and Scott on what was most significant about what the legislature did or didn't do.
I think they did more than they've done in recent years. The caller makes the point that it could have been more, but there's a balanced budget. They've made changes on health care and education, so there has been progress.
Scott.
And I'd say, in terms of something that's going to have lasting impact, the way California's positioned itself for Obamacare was a big deal.
Scott Detrow, our bureau chief at KQED, John Myers, KXTV in Sacramento, Juliet Williams of the Associated Press. Thanks all very much for adding your perspective to what the legislature did or did not do during this last session. Thank you. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.